Welcome to Nightlife, a bite-size episode.
Here's a short true story about love and loss and fashion and politics. During the Great Depression in 1930, a 19-year-old Zara Dickens borrowed £150 from her father and opened a garment business in Melbourne's Little Collins Street. After 3 years, she decided to close the company because her friend and business partner, Betty James, had left to get married. That's what happened. Since her romantic interest at the time, Harold, wanted to save more money before committing to marriage, she decided to go on a cruise around the world. Let's fast forward to 1946. After her first marriage had ended, she reunited with the love of her youth, Harold, and married him. Zara then went on to become one of Australia's high-end evening dress designers. However, she is better known for being the wife of Prime Minister Harold Holt, that's the Harold, who disappeared, of course, while swimming in the ocean near Portsea in December 1967. But what was her contribution to Australian fashion and what was she like as a designer? Dr. Emily Brayshaw is in the School of Design at the University of Technology in Sydney and joins us this evening. Emily, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what do we know about Zara Bates Holt's upbringing? She sounds as though she might have been born with a silver spoon.
There was a bit of a silver spoon.
She's off on a cruise around the world when she's young.
There was a silver spoon, but she did work incredibly hard too. So she was the daughter of Sidney Herbert Dickens and Violet from Scotland. I don't know where Herbert was from, but her mother was Scottish. But she was educated at Wrighton Girls School and Toorak College in Melbourne. Mm. And both institutions continue to be leading private schools in Victoria. So her parents were very wealthy. The family lived in Toorak. Her father was a merchant who co-owned the Victoria Soap and Candle Company.
Right.
And she had quite a privileged upbringing and mixed with Melbourne society.
Was it common for women to open businesses in the 1930s?
So Zara's sort of opening that right at the crux of 1930s. She would have been thinking about it. She's coming from the 20s. And in the 20s, we see women really pushing the boundaries. You know, there's the flapper aesthetic, the flapper lifestyle. And despite the fact that Australian women were still quite conservative and devoted to this image of the woman as a homemaker, there were women like Zara who were independent figures. So figures like the McDonough sisters, who were the very first women to own and operate a film company. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Zara's sort of coming from this environment, despite the fact that it was still quite conservative in Australian society for women at the time.
Did she know anything about garment? She opens a dress shop, essentially, doesn't she?
But she does, yeah.
But does she know anything about garment design or manufacture? No.
No, essentially not so much, but she had a passion for fashion. Zara was about my height, 5'2", and she was also quite plump. And so she said that actually inspired her interest for couture because it meant that she could keep up with the recent fashions but make them to suit herself. She was also incredibly creative.
Well, I was thinking 5'2" and plump would not have suited the aesthetic, the flapper aesthetic at the time,
no,
would it?
Definitely no, not, which was that super thin sort of boy
absolutely
look.
Absolutely stick thin boy look.
That's yeah, right. And even in the 30s too.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So how did she run into Harold Holt? Because, well, Harold's from Toorak as well, isn't he? I mean, they're both pretty well-heeled.
Well, Harold sort of wasn't, actually. He had quite an interesting background. His father was initially a school teacher.
Oh, right.
And by the time he made and Harold grew up in Sydney, but he studied law at Melbourne University. He was on a scholarship and he was quite a dashing sportsman as well. And she met Harold when she was just 16. There was like this instant attraction, instant mutual attraction.
But he didn't want to get married. He says, I've got to save up before I get married.
Well, he said, yes, that he needed to sort of save up before he got married.
Yeah.
But they did argue a lot. They were very big, jealous arguing. She said that they had very different personalities. She was always she was also very young. She was also 16.
Mm.
And so, you know, maybe I don't have enough money. Maybe that was a bit of an excuse on his part as well.
Yes, the plump little 16-year-old. All right.
Yeah.
So she takes a round the world cruise, which I, you know, like as you do, I suppose, where she meets her first husband. Now she gets married to him and she returns to Australia. What did she do after that?
Yeah, so interestingly, sort of as a side note, what happened, one of the reasons she decided to open the dress shop in 1930s was to try to raise the money. And when the business was dissolved, when her friend left to get married, Zara cleared about £1,500, and this was a lot of money. And she thought that it would let her and Harold get married. And he said, yeah, no, I'm going to be the breadwinner. So you go overseas and you spend your money, which was really strange. So she went abroad. She married a British army officer stationed in India. And that was sort of what she did during the first time. So she married James Heywood Fell. She spent a lot of time in India, and maybe that influenced her tastes for vibrant colours. And when she returned from India, Harold sort of met up with her. Apparently, he sort of followed her in the press and like kept press clippings, and his prospects improved, and he resumed talk of marriage. So he definitely.
But hang on, she's already married. So what's happened here?
Yeah, well, he sort of wants to, you know, get back with her, and she's like, "Yeah, mate, no, you know, I'm married." He even came to her, and, you know, so she came back to Australia by herself. James, the husband, was supposed to come back too. And the night before his ship, the husband's ship arrives in Melbourne, Harold gives her this big diamond and sapphire engagement ring. But she's like, no, I'm already, you know, I'm already going to get married and go. So she sails for India, marries the fiancé, James Fell, the fiancé, and they live in Melbourne for a few years. So, you know, there's sort of a lot of gossip about why she didn't marry him.
But obviously, obviously they break up at some point.
They do break up. They do break up. But what happens as well is Zara keeps coming, even though she's living in India, she keeps coming back to Melbourne throughout the 30s to have her children. You know, obviously it's an important time. You want to be somewhere stable. You want to be with your family. You want that support. And so she comes back and forth to Australia to, you know, to have her children, to make trips to see families.
Right, okay.
And on so, one of those trips, she gets back together with Harold, even though she's still married.
Oh dear. Ooh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, onto the fashion part of it, because this is really what our conversation's about in a sense.
Sure, of course.
Zara starts up her business designing evening dresses.
Yes.
Because she reunites with her friend, Betty James, and they start up a business designing evening dresses. So do they open a shop as well?
Yes, they do. So they open up the shop again post-World War II. They call it MAG. It's catered for a wealthy clientele. Again, money's a little bit tight with Harold at the beginning there. And so she opens the shop again like they're making money. And she's catering for a really wealthy clientele. The shop's very successful. And also Harold was away a lot post-World War II. And so I get the feeling that like this bright, energetic woman needed something to do.
Right. Well, yeah. Did she know anything about dress design or...?
Not a lot, but
I mean, she'd never studied it, obviously.
No, but she was really good to tapping into the tastes of the time.
Right.
So, and she was also a really astute businesswoman. Like, she learned a lot of this from her father, I'd imagine, who was, you know, the soap and candle, the merchant. And so she employed 20 people in the back room and two other three sales assistants. And the business went from strength to strength. So she was really good at managing people. And you really do need those skills in the fashion industry too.
Emily Brayshaw is with us. Dr. Brayshaw is at the University of Technology in Sydney at the School of Design. We're talking about the legacy of Dame Zara Bates, the wife of Harold Holt, who was a fashion designer in Melbourne after the Second World War. One of her dresses won the Australian Gown of the Year Award. There was such a thing in 1961. What did that look? What did the dress look like?
Oh, it was quite stunning, actually. I found a picture of Helen Bicknell wearing it. And Helen Bicknell at the time was a young it girl and beautiful Australian model. And it's sort of in a column shape. It looks like a separate top and skirt, long sort of ankle-length skirt, even though it's all one gown. It's got a boat neck and it is beaded. The fabric is lamb's wool and a blend of lamb's wool and a synthetic called terylene, which means that it was very light, didn't crush so well, and just a really beautiful fabric to wear.
Mm. Okay, I mean, when we think of famous designers, we think of you know, Coco Chanel and the little black dress, I suppose, and or was that Dior? I can't remember. and we think of the mini skirt and so on with Jean Shrimpton and others. What do we think of when we think about Zara Bates?
I don't know that people think a lot about her so much anymore. Her gowns are really wonderful, but they were for and of an era, and that era has sort of passed. Right. People dress a lot more casually now, and it's really interesting you ask that question. I've been thinking about it a lot. Zara said in 1961 about her gown of the year that the idea for her gown came from following recent fashion trends. Mm-hmm. And I think possibly that's why she's not necessarily better known. Rather than being an innovator or a leader, she was very, very successful on picking up on innovative fashion ideas and trends and interpreting them for Australian tastes and the Australian society scene. Having said that, though, her gowns are a really fascinating window on that set, and they are an important part of Australian history.
Yeah, because they're all, these are all one-offs. These are handmade one-offs, aren't they?
They are. It is couture, a lot of it, yeah. Mm. A lot of them are in the National Gallery of Victoria.
Really?
Too. They're serious collection pieces, yeah.
Mm. What did Harold make of all this? Because he's, after all, manoeuvring under the Menzies government to climb the political ladder. What did he make of his wife's shenanigans in the dress shop?
So obviously he benefited from a lot because he still wasn't earning a lot of money and her business grew and grew. So she ended up having a boutique at Myer in Melbourne. She ended up having a shop in Double Bay in Sydney. She ended up having two boutiques actually in Melbourne and one in Adelaide. And the shops were so successful that the Holts were able to purchase a home in Melbourne and two holiday houses, one in Portland in Victoria and one at the Great Barrier Reef.
It was her money, not Harold's.
It was. And from the beginning, Harold always said to her, your business has to come second to my political career. If it ever interferes, you have to give it up.
Yes, he was happy to take the money, though.
Yeah, indeed.
And entertain his girlfriends, of course,
at
the holiday houses.
Yeah.
As well. What, after Harold Holt disappeared, what did she do?
So she remarried the federal politician Geoffrey Bate. Mm-hmm. She continued to live in Melbourne and she regularly lived at Bates' houses in Tilba in New South Wales. She sold the Mag boutiques in 1976, but she kept an interest in designing. And in 1979, she was actually appointed chairman of the Yves Saint Laurent board in Melbourne.
Okay.
It wasn't really a conventional marriage, though. So she, you know, left Geoff Bate and sort of moved to Surfers Paradise in 1980. But even before that, like after Harold's death, she went on sort of a 2-month trip in 1968. She went to a memorial service at Westminster Abbey for Harold Holt, where she lunched with the Queen. She stayed with President Lyndon Johnson and his wife at the White House.
Oh, wow.
In 1968, yeah, and Lyndon Johnson's wife, Lady Bird, really enjoyed Zara's company, talking about her as a very bright, witty, breezy, jolly sort of person.
She does sound like good company, doesn't she? She does.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, so you say that there are examples of her dresses still in fashion museums?
Yes.
Mm. I suppose there might be some in private collections too.
I dare say there would be, absolutely. You know, a lot of them did make their way into, you know, the homes and collections of really wealthy socialites of the 50s, 60s, 70s, and even, I would imagine, in the late 40s as well.
Mm.
And, you know, people do hang on to valuable items. People do collect fashions. You know, they may well be in the wardrobe with Grandma's Balenciaga. Who knows?
Yes, who knows? Who knows, yeah. Exactly. Well, it's a great story. Emily, terrific. Thank you for telling it.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.